Aunt Bobby was tight-lipped when they got home, sitting in the common room with a massive black weight in her hand that she held without lifting, like a child clutching a favorite toy. The monitor was set to a news feed with the sound turned low. Live feeds of the damage in Salton played out in the four corners of the monitor, but she didn't seem to be looking at them. David's mother sat at the table, scrolling through her hand terminal. When David and his father walked in, there was a moment of eye contact between his parents that had the weight of significance. He didn't know what it meant. His father tapped David's shoulder in a kind of farewell, then stepped over to the railing.
"Hey, sis."
"Hey," Aunt Bobby said.
"Did security talk to you?"
"Not yet," Aunt Bobby said. "They know how to find me if they want to." David scowled toward his mother. He couldn't think of a reason that security would want to talk with Aunt Bobby. He tried to make it into a threat against him, that they'd be looking to her for information about the batches he'd cooked for Hutch, but that felt too wrong. It had to be about the bombing, but he couldn't make sense of that either. His mother only lifted her eyebrows and asked how the meeting with Mr. Oki had gone. His father answered for him, and the uncomfortable tension around Aunt Bobby shifted into the background. There was going to be a party for the whole family tomorrow night, his mother told him. Pop-Pop and the cousins were coming from Adderpole, and Uncle Istvan and his new wife were making the trip from Donbad Nova. They'd rented a room at the best restaurant in Breach Candy. David gave a quiet, generalized thanks to the universe that he'd arranged to see Hutch tonight instead. Slipping away from his own celebration would have been impossible. After dinner, David said some vague things about friends from school and celebrating, promised not to go to Salton, and ducked out the door before anyone could get too inquisitive. Once he was out walking to the tube station, he felt a moment of relaxation, almost peace. The whole ride out to Martina's town, David almost felt like he was floating. His data sets were done, or else not his anymore. And even with all the rest of it, Lily and Hutch, the protesters and the bombings, the family party and the prospect of leaving home, just not having the lab work hanging over him was like taking a vice off his ribs. Once he was in Salton, working development would be 1,000 times worse than anything in the lower university. But that was later. For now, he could set his hand terminal to play Biba Papu tunes and relax, even if it was only for the length of the tube ride to Martinez Town. It was still the most peace he'd had for himself in as long as he could remember. Hutch was waiting for him when he got there. The construction lamp threw off harsh white light, the battery hissing almost silently. The shadows seemed to have eaten Hutch's eyes.
"Little man,"
he said as David stepped into the room.
"Wasn't thinking to hear from you. Was risky talking to me with family and authority right there beside us. You were looking jumpy. People notice that kind of thing."
"Sorry," David said. He sat down on a crate, rough plastic clinging to the fabric of his pants and pulling his cuffs up around his ankles. "I just needed to talk to you."
"I'm always here for you, my friend," Hutch said. "You know that. You're my number one guy. Any problem you've got, I've got."
David nodded, picking absently at his fingernail beds. Now that he was here, he found the subject of Lily was harder to bring up than he'd expected.
"I got into development." "Knew it. Development's always the place for the smart ones. Play your cards and you'll be riding this planet like a private cart," Hutch said. "That's not why we're here, though, is it?"
"No, I wanted to get in touch with Lily, see if maybe she wanted to come celebrate it with me. Only my hand terminal went corrupt, and I didn't have her information on backup, and I was thinking that since you...
David swallowed, trying to work the knot out of his throat.
Since you know her better than anyone...
He chanced a look at Hutch's face. The man was expressionless as stone, turned in and silent. It was more threatening than bared teeth.
She came to you.
David had promised himself that he wouldn't tell Hutch about the message, and technically he didn't, but the silence implicated him. Hutch drew a deep breath and ran his hands through his hair.
Don't worry about Lily. I'm taking care of Lily.
She seemed like she was in trouble.
Okay, little man. You don't follow what's happening here, so I'm going to help. I own Lily. She's my property, see? And she screwed up, started being with the wrong crowd. She got political. People like us don't do that. Earth, Mars, OPA, that shit is for citizens. It just draws attention for people like us.
She looked scared, David said. He could hear the whine in his voice, and he hated that he couldn't keep it out. He sounded like a kid.
She said she needed money.
Hutch laughed.
Don't ever give that bitch money.
Property, David said. She wanted to buy herself, didn't she? Hutch's expression softened to something like sympathy. Pity, maybe. He leaned forward and put a hand on David's knee.
Lily is a slice of poison with a pretty mouth, little man. That's the truth. She did a bad, stupid thing. And now she's working that mistake off. That's all. I know how much money you have because I'm the guy that gave it to you. You don't have enough to clear her debts.
Maybe I could...
You don't have half. You've got maybe a quarter. There's nothing you can do for that girl. She gave you a hard-on, and that was nice for you. Don't make it more than that. You understand what I'm saying to you?
The deep, sickening tug of humiliation pulled at David's heart. He looked down, willing himself not to cry. He hated the reaction. He was angry with it, and with himself, and with Hutch, and his parents, and the world. He burned with embarrassment and rage and impotence. Hutch stood up, his shadow spilling across the floor and wall like spent engine oil.
Best we don't talk for a while, Hutch said. You got a lot in the air. Don't worry about the cooking. We'll get that all smoothed out when you're in Salton. Then we can go into production for real, eh? See some money worth having.
Okay, David said. Hutch sighed and pulled up his hand terminal. As he tapped at its keyboard, he kept talking.
I'm going to slip a little something in that account of yours, right? Call it a bonus. Take and get yourself something nice, right?
Right. And then Hutch was gone, walking out toward Martinez Town and the tube station and the world. David sat alone where he'd sat with Lily not all that long before. The sense of peace and calm was gone. His hands balled in fists, and he had nothing he could hit. He felt cored out, hollowed. He waited 10 minutes the way he was supposed to, and then took himself home. The next night was the party, his party. Pop-Pop was there, smiling a little lopsided since the stroke, and thinner than David had ever seen him, but still strong-voiced and chipper. Aunt Bobby sat on one side of him, David's father on the other, like they were propping him up. Muted sounds of silverware against plates
and voices raised in conversation competed with a three-piece band set up on a dais by the front doors that filtered into the private back room. Green and gold tablecloths stretched over three tables to make it all seem like it connected. The meal itself had been chicken in black sauce with rice and fresh vegetables, and David had eaten two helpings without really tasting them. His father had taken on the expense of an open bar, and Uncle Istvan's new wife was already well on her way to drunk and sort of hitting on one of the older cousins. David's mother paced the back of the room, touching shoulders, dropping in and out of conversations like she was running for office. David wanted badly to be anywhere else.
"You know, back in the ancient days,"
Pop-Pop said, gesturing with a glass of whiskey,
"they built cathedrals, massive churches lifted up to the glory of God. Far, far beyond what you'd expect people to manage with just quarry stone and trees and a few steel knives, you know. Just a few simple tools."
"We've heard about the cathedrals," Aunt Bobby said. She had a drink, too, but David couldn't tell what it was. Legally, David wasn't supposed to drink alcohol for another year, but he had a bulb of beer in his hand. He didn't actually like the taste of it, but he drank it anyway.
"The thing that's important, though, is the time, you see,"
Pop-Pop said.
"The time. Raising up one of those cathedrals would take whole generations. The men who drew the plans, who envisioned the final form of the thing, they would be dead long before it was finished. It might be their grandsons or their great-grandsons or their great-great-grandsons who saw the work complete."
Across the room, one of the younger cousins was crying, and David's mother sloped over and knelt, taking the squalling kid's hand in her own and leading him to his mother. David choked down another mouthful of beer. Next year, he'd be in Salton, so busy that he wouldn't have to come to these things anymore.
"There's a beauty in that,"
Pop-Pop said earnestly to everyone and no one.
"Such a massive plan. Such ambition. A man might be setting the final stone and think back to his own father who'd set the stones below him, and his grandfather who'd set the stones below that. To have a place in the great scheme, that was the beauty of it. To be part of something you didn't begin and you would not see completed. It was beautiful."
"I love you, Dad," Aunt Bobby said. "But that's bullshit." David blinked. He looked from Pop-Pop to his own father and back. The men looked embarrassed. It was like she'd farted. Aunt Bobby took another sip of her drink.
"Bobby,"
David's father said,
"maybe you should ease up on that stuff."
"I'm fine. It's just that I've been hearing about the cathedral since I was a kid, and it's bullshit. Seriously, who were they to decide what everyone was going to be doing for the next four generations? It's not like they asked their however many great-grandkids if they wanted to be stonecutters. Maybe some of them wanted to be musicians. Hell, be architects and do something of their own. Deciding what everyone's going to do, what we're going to be, it's hubris, isn't it?"
"We're not talking about cathedrals anymore, are we, sis?"
"Yeah, because it was a really obscure metaphor," Aunt Bobby replied. "I'm just saying that the plan may be great as long as you're inside it. You step outside, though, and then what?" There was a pain in her voice that David couldn't fathom, but he saw it reflected in his grandfather's eyes. The old man put his hand on Aunt Bobby's, and she held it like she was a little girl about to be led off to her bath time. David's father, on the other hand, looked peevish.
"Don't take her seriously, Pop-Pop. She was talking to security all day, and she's still cranky.
Is there a reason I shouldn't be? It's like every time anything strange happens, let's go talk to Draper again.
You had to expect that, Roberta,
his father said. He only called her Roberta when he was angry.
It's the consequence of your decision.
And what decision is that?
She snapped. Her voice was getting louder. Some of the cousins were looking over at them now, their own conversations fading. David's father laughed.
You aren't working. What are they calling it? Indefinite administrative leave?
Psychological furlough, Aunt Bobby said. What's your point?
My point is that of course they're going to want to talk to you when things get weird. You can't blame them for being suspicious. We were almost killed by Earthers. Everyone in this room, and those rooms out there, and the corridors, and you were working for them.
I was not!
It wasn't a shout, because it didn't have the gravel and roughness of shouting. It was loud, though, and it carried power along with it like a punch.
I worked with the faction that was trying to avert the war, the one that did avert the war. Everyone in these rooms is alive because of the people I helped, but with them, not for them.
The room was quiet, but David's father was too deep into the fight to notice. He rolled his eyes.
Really? Who was paying your wages? Earth was. The people that hate us.
They don't hate us,
Bobby said, her voice tired.
They're afraid of us.
Then why do they act like they hate us?
David's father said, with something like triumph.
Because that's what fear looks like when it needs some place to go.
David's mother seemed to appear behind the three of them, like some sort of magic trick. She wasn't there, and then she was, her restraining hand on her husband's shoulder. Her smile was humorless and undeniable.
We're here for David tonight, she said.
Yes,
Pop-Pop said, rubbing his palm against the back of Aunt Bobby's hand, soothing her.
For David.
His father's face set into an annoyed mask, but Aunt Bobby nodded.
You're right, she said. I'm sorry, David. Dad, I'm sorry. I've just had a really rough day and probably too much to drink.
It's all right, Angel,
Pop-Pop said. Tears brightened his eyes.
I just thought that by now I'd have some idea of who I was, of what I was going to do next, and...
I know, Angel. We all know what you're going through.
She laughed at that, wiping her eyes with the back of her hand.
All of us but me, then.
The rest of the evening went just the way those things were supposed to go. People laughed and argued and drank. His father tried to call for silence and make a little speech about how proud he was, but one of the kid cousins was whispering and tapping on his hand terminal all the way through it. A few people gave David small, discreet presents of money to help him set up his dorm in Salton. Uncle Istvan's new wife gave him an unpleasant boozy kiss before gathering herself up and walking out with Istvan on her arm. They took a rental cart back home, his parents and Aunt Bobby and him. He couldn't shake the image of her weeping at the table. You step outside, though, and then what? The cart's wheels sounded sticky against the corridor floors. The lights had dimmed all through Breach Candy, simulating a twilight he'd never actually seen. Somewhere, the sun would slip below a horizon, a blue sky darken. He'd seen it in pictures, on video. In his life, though, it was just that the LEDs changed color and intensity. David leaned his head against one of the cart's support poles, letting the vibration of the engines and the wheels translate directly into his skull. It felt comfortable. His mother, sitting beside him, pressed her hand against his shoulder, and he had the powerful physical memory of coming back from a party when he'd been very young, 6, maybe 7 years old. He remembered putting his head in her lap, fading into sleep with the texture of her slacks against his cheek. That was never going to happen again. The woman beside him hardly even seemed to be the same person, and in a few months, he wouldn't see her anymore, not like he did now. And what would she have done if she knew about Hutch, about Lily? His mother smiled at him, and it looked like love, but it was love for some other boy, the one she thought he was. He smiled back because he was supposed to. When they got home, he went straight back to his room. He'd been around people enough. The cheesy generic wall was still up, and he shifted it back to Una Meng. Massive dark eyes with mascara on the lashes looked out at him. He dropped to the bed. Outside, Aunt Bobby and his father were talking. He listened for a buzz of anger in their voices, but it wasn't there. They were just talking. The water pipes started to whine, his mother taking her evening bath. Everything small and domestic and safe, and out there somewhere, Lily was working off her debt. She'd asked for his help, and he'd failed. And Hutch. Maybe he'd always been scared of Hutch. Maybe that was what had made cooking for him seem like the right thing. The wise thing, even. Hutch was the kind of dangerous that could make people into property, could take them and make them disappear. Being part of that world was fun, exciting. It was a way to step outside all the good student, good son, good prospects crap that was his life. So what that it scared him now? So what that Lily was probably being rented out to whoever had the money, and David wouldn't see her again? He'd made his choice, and this was the consequence. Una Meng stared out at him, soulful and erotic. David turned out the lights, grabbed a pillow, and pulled it over his head. As his mind began to fragment down into sleep, Lily kept coming back to him, her face, her voice. The soft, almost gentle way Hutch had said, "I own Lily, and you don't have enough to clear her debts." He wished that he did. He walked into a bleak, prison-like room that was half dream and half imagination. Lily shied back from the sudden light and then saw who it was, and her face lit up. "David," she said, "how did you do it? How did you save me?" And with an almost electrical shock, he knew the answer. He sat up, turned on the light. Una Meng's sly, sad smile seemed more knowing than it had before. "Took you long enough." He checked the time. Well past midnight. It didn't matter. It wouldn't wait. He listened at his door for a few seconds. No voices, except the professional enunciation of the newsfeed announcer. David took his hand terminal out of his satchel, sat on the edge of his bed, and put in the connection request. He didn't expect an answer, but Stepan's face appeared on the screen almost instantly.
"Big Dave, hey,"
Stepan said.
"Heard about your placement. Good going, cousin."
"Thanks," David said, keeping his voice low. "But look, I need a favor."
"Sure,"
Stepan said. "You have lab time?"
"More time than sleep," Stepan said ruefully. "But you've got placement. You don't need to scrounge for lab hours anymore."
"Kind of do, and I could use an extra hand."
How long are we talking about?
10 hours, David said. Maybe a little more. But some of that's waiting, so you can do your own stuff, too. And I'll help with your work if you help with mine.
Stepan shrugged.
All right. I've got hours tomorrow, starting at 8. You know where my space is?
Do,
David said.
See you there,
Stepan said, and dropped the connection. So that was the first part. David's mind was already leaping ahead to the rest. He had enough tryptamine to build from, and the catalysts were always easy. What he didn't have was sodium borohydride or amproxen in anything like the volume he'd need. Closing his eyes, he went through the inventory of his secret locker, thinking about each reagent and what he could gracefully change it into. Carbon double bonds cleaved, ketones formed, inactive isomers were forced into different configurations. Slowly, certainly, a clear biochemical path formed. He opened his eyes, jotted down a quick flowchart of the reactions, and built a wish list. When he was done, he switched his hand terminal over to the main distributor's site and ordered the reagents he'd need with immediate delivery to Stepan's lab. The total bill was enough to clean out his secret account, but that was fine with him. He'd never cared about the money. When his hand terminal chirped the morning's alarm, he'd managed a 2-hour nap. He changed into clean clothes, ducked into the bathroom to wet down his hair and shave. His mind was already 3 steps ahead. His hand terminal chimed with breaking news, and he almost dreaded to look. But for once, it was something good. 8 people had been arrested in connection with the pressure loss on the tube system and were being actively questioned about the bomb in Sultan. While David brushed his teeth, he watched the news feed play. When the scroll of mugshots came, he had a moment's anxiety. What if Lili was one of them? What if that was what Hutch meant by her getting political? But none of the faces was familiar. They were young people, none of them over 18, but well-worn. 2 had black eyes, and one of the women had been crying. Or else she'd been tear-gassed. David dismissed them.
Where are you going?
His mother asked as he walked, head bowed and shoulders hunched, for the door.
Friend needs help,
he said. He'd meant the lie that Stepan needed an extra hand at the labs, but halfway to the lower university, he noticed that by not elaborating, he'd sort of told the truth. The fact was weirdly disturbing. The day was a massive cook. With the 2 of them in the space, it was crowded, and Stepan, sleepless, hadn't showered recently. Between the chemical vapors that the fume hood didn't whisk away and the stink of adolescent boy, the heat of the burners, and Stepan's constant, nearly intimate presence, the day passed slowly. But it passed well. Stepan didn't ask what David's experiment was, and during the quiet times, David ran Stepan's datasets and even pointed out a flaw in the statistical assumptions he was making that made the final data prettier when he corrected it. When the early afternoon came and they were flagging, David measured out a small dose of amphetamine and split it between them. When his mother requested a connection, he didn't answer, just sent back the message that he'd be home late to eat dinner without him. Instead of the usual indirect disapproval, she sent back a note that she supposed she'd have to get used to that. It left him sad until the timer went off and he had to cool the batch and add catalyst, and the work took his attention. There was a real pleasure to the work, something he hadn't felt in years. He knew each reaction, each bond he was breaking, each molecular reconfiguration. He could look at the milky suspension, see a subtle change in the texture, and know what had happened. This, he thought, was what mastery felt like. The last of his run was finished, the powder measured out into pale pink gel caps and melted into sugared lozenges. His satchel was thick with them and heavy as a bowling ball. At a guess, he had the equivalent of his father's retirement account on his hip. The public LEDs were dim as he walked home. His eyes felt bloodshot and gritty, but his step was light. Aunt Bobby was in the common room, the way she always was, doing deep lunges and watching the monitor. A young woman with skin the color of coffee and cream and pale lips was speaking seriously into the camera. A red band around her had "Security Alert High" scrolling in four languages. David paused. When Aunt Bobby looked back at him, not pausing in her exercises, he nodded toward the screen. "They found plans for another bomb," Aunt Bobby said.
"Oh,"
David said, then shrugged. It was probably better that way. Let security focus on the political intrigue. It just meant there'd be fewer eyes looking at him.
"Your mother's asleep."
"Where's Dad?"
"Nariman. Work emergency."
"All right," David said, and headed back to his room. Aunt Bobby hadn't noticed the bulk of his satchel, or if she had, she hadn't mentioned it. With his door safely closed, he checked the time. Late, but not too late, and between the late afternoon amphetamines and the excitement and anxiety, trying to rest wasn't an option. Now that he had the product, all he wanted to do was get rid of it. Get it all away from him so that no one would stumble across it. Get this all over with. He pulled out his hand terminal and put through a connection request to the contact Hutch had given him for emergencies only. He waited. Seconds stretched. A minute passed, and the tight feeling of panic grew in David's gut. The screen jumped, and Hutch was there, scowling into the camera. He was naked from the waist up, his pale hair messy. The hardness in his expression was clear, even through the connection.
"Yeah,"
Hutch said. It was a non-committal greeting. If security had been watching over David's shoulder, they wouldn't even be sure that he and Hutch knew each other.
"We need to meet," David said. "Tonight. It's important."
Hutch was silent. A dry tongue ran across the man's lower lip, and he shook his ragged head. David's heart was thudding like little hammer blows against his ribcage.
"Don't know what you mean, cousin,"
Hutch said.
"No one's listening in. I'm not busted. But we have to talk tonight," David said. "And you have to bring Lily."
"You want to say that again?"
"1 hour, the usual place. You have to bring Lily."
"Yeah, I thought maybe you were giving me some kind of order there, little man,"
Hutch said, his voice buzzing with anger.
"I'm gonna tell you myself that you burned this number because you got a little drunk or some shit. Out of my deep fucking kindness, I'm going to pretend you didn't forget yourself, yeah? So you get yourself back to bed and sleep until you're sober."
"I am sober," David said. "But it has to be tonight. It has to be now."
"Not going to happen,"
Hutch said, and leaned forward to shut off the connection.
"I'll call security,"
David said.
"If you don't, I'll call security. I'll tell them everything."
Hutch froze, sat back. He pressed his hands together, palm to palm, index fingers touching his lips like he was praying. David squeezed his hands into fists, then released them, squeezed and released. An uncomfortable creeping moved up the back of his neck and onto his scalp. Hutch drew in a long breath and let it out slow.
All right, he said. You come to me. 1 hour.
And Lily.
Heard you the first time,
Hutch said, his voice cool and gray as slate.
But anything smells like a setup, and your little girlfriend dies first. You savvy?
You don't need to hurt her. This isn't a setup. It's business.
So you say,
Hutch said, and cut the feed. David's hands were trembling. He shouldn't have said that about going to security, but it was the only leverage he had, the only thing that would make Hutch listen. When he got there, he could explain it all. It would be all right. He stuffed the hand terminal in his pocket, stood silently for a moment, then shifted the wall to the still from Gods of Risk. Two men facing each other with the fate of everything in the balance. David lifted his chin and picked up the satchel. When he came into the common room, Aunt Bobby frowned.
Going somewhere? She asked.
Friend, he said, shrugging and pulling the satchel closer to his hip.
Just a thing. But it's here, right? In breech candy?
A new tickle of anxiety lifted the hair at the back of his neck. Her tone wasn't accusing or suspicious. That made it worse.
Why?
Aunt Bobby nodded toward the monitor with its red border and earnest announcer.
Curfew,
she said. David could feel the word trying to get into his mind, trying to mean something that he didn't let it mean.
What curfew? They put the whole city on first stage lockdown. No unaccompanied minors on the tube system or service tunnels. No gatherings in the common areas after 7. Doubled patrols, too. If you're heading out of the neighborhood, you may have to send your regrets, she said. Then, David, are you okay?
He didn't remember sitting down. He was just on the kitchen floor, his legs folded under him like some kind of Zen monk. His skin was slick with sweat, even though he didn't feel hot. Hutch was going to meet him, and he wouldn't be there. He'd think it was a setup. And he'd have Lily with him because David had told him to, had insisted, threatened even. Without thinking, he pulled out his hand terminal and requested a connection to Hutch. The address came back invalid. It had already been deleted.
David, what's the matter?
She was leaning over him now, her face a mask of concern. David waved his hand, feeling like he was underwater. No unaccompanied minors. He had to get to Martinez Town. He had to go now.
I need a favor, he said,
and his voice sounded thin and strangled.
All right. Come with me, just so I can use the tube.
Okay, she said. Let me grab a clean shirt. They walked the half kilometer to the tube station in silence. David kept his hands in his pockets and his satchel on the other side of his body, so that Aunt Bobby might not see how full it was. He hated this. His chest felt tight, and he needed to pee, even though he didn't really. At the tube station, a red-haired security man in body armor and carrying an automatic rifle stopped them. David felt the mass of the drugs pulling at his shoulder like a lead weight. If they asked to see what was in the satchel, he'd go to prison forever. Lily would be killed. He'd lose his place in Salton.
Name and destination, please.
Gunnery Sergeant Roberta Draper, MCRM. Aunt Bobby said. This is my nephew, David. He just got his placement, and I'm taking him to a party.
Sergeant?
The security man said.
Marines, huh?
A shadow passed over her face, but her smile dispelled it. Yes, sir. The security man turned to David. His expression seemed friendly. David tasted vomit and fear at the back of his throat.
Party?
Yes, sir, he said. Yes, sir.
Well, don't do any permanent damage, son,
the security man said, chuckling.
Carry on, Sergeant.
And then they were past him and into the tube station proper. The white LEDs seemed brighter than usual, and his knees struggled to support him as he walked up to the kiosk. When he got the tickets for Martinez Town, Aunt Bobby looked at him quizzically but didn't say anything. 15 minutes to Adderpaul, then a change of cars, and 20 to Martinez Town. The other people in the car were grubby, their clothes rough at the edges. An old man with an exhausted expression and yellowed eyes sat across from them with a crying infant ignored in his arms. An immensely fat woman in the back of the car shouted obscenities into her hand terminal, someone on the other side of the connection shouting back. The air smelled of bodies and old air filters. With every passing kilometer, Aunt Bobby's expression grew cooler and less trusting. He wanted to be angry with her for thinking that he wouldn't have friends in Martinez Town, for being prejudiced against the neighborhood just because it was older and working class. It would have been easier if she hadn't been right. At the Martinez Town station, David turned to her and put his hand to her, palm out. Okay, thank you, he said. Now just stay here, I'll be right back.
What's going on here, kid? Aunt Bobby asked.
Nothing. Don't worry about it. Just wait here for me and I'll be right back. Aunt Bobby crossed her arms. All warmth was gone from her face. A bright flare of resentment lit David's mind. He didn't have time to reassure her. Just wait, he said sharply, then spun on his heel and hurried off. A few seconds later, he risked a glance back over his shoulder. Aunt Bobby hadn't moved. Her crossed arms and disapproving scowl could have been carved into stone. The LEDs of the tube station turned her into a black silhouette. David turned the corner, and she was gone. His satchel bounced against his hip, and he ran. It wasn't more than 50 meters before he was winded, but he pushed on the best he could. He didn't have time. Hutch might be there already. And in point of fact, he was. The crates had been rearranged. All of them were stacked against the walls, packed tight so that no one and nothing could hide behind them. The only exception was a doubled stack standing to Hutch's left and right like bodyguards, like the massive sides of a great throne. Hutch stood in the shadows between them, a thin black cigarette clinging to his lip. His yellow shirt hung loose against his frame, and the muscles of his arms each seemed to cast their own shadows. The brushed black pistol in his hand made his scars seem like an omen. Lily knelt in front of him, in the center of the room, hugging herself. Her hair was lank and greasy-looking. Her skin was pale, except right around her eyes, where the rash red of crying stained her. She was wearing a man's shirt that was too big for her, and a pair of work pants stained by something dark and washed pale again. When David cleared his throat and stepped into the room, her expression went from surprise to despair. David wished like hell he'd thought to stop at a bathroom.
Hey there, little man,
Hutch said. The insincerity of his casualness was a threat.
Now then, there was something you wanted to see me about, yeah?
David nodded. The thickness in his throat almost kept him from speaking.
I want to buy her, David said. Buy her debt.
Hutch laughed softly, then took a drag on his cigarette. The ember flared bright and then dimmed.
"Pretty sure we covered that already,"
Hutch said, and the words were smoke.
"You don't have that kind of cash."
"A quarter. You said I had a quarter." Hutch's eyes narrowed, and he tilted his head to the side. David dropped his satchel to the floor and slid it toward Lily with his toe. She reached out a thin hand toward it.
"If you touch that bag, I will end you,"
Hutch said to Lily, and she flinched back.
"How about you tell me what that's supposed to be?"
"I cooked a batch. A big one. The biggest I've ever done," David said. "Mostly, it's 3,4-methylene dioxy and methylamphetamine. I did a run of 5-hydroxytryptophan, too, since I didn't need to order anything extra to do it, and 2,5-dimethoxy-4-bromophenethylamine. Some of that, too. I got all the reagents myself. I did all the work. It's gotta be worth more than 4 times what I put into it. And you get all of it free. That's the deal."
"You..."
Hutch said, then paused, bit his lip. When he spoke again, he had a buzz of outrage in his voice.
"You cooked a batch."
"It's got plenty. Lots."
"You stupid fuck,"
Hutch said.
"Do you have any idea how much trouble you just handed me? How am I going to move that much shit? Who's going to buy it?"
"But you get it free." Hutch pointed the gun at the satchel.
"I flood the market, and the prices go down. Not just for me, for everybody. You understand that? Everyone. People start coming up from Donbad Nova because they hear we've got cheap shit. All the sellers up there start wondering what I mean by it. And I've got drama."
"You could wait. Just hold on to it."
"I'm going to have to, right? Only it gets out that I'm sitting on an egg like that, someone gets greedy, decides maybe it's time to take me on, and boom, I got drama again. Cut it how you want, kid. You just fucked me."
"He didn't know, Hutch," Lily said. She sounded so tired. Hutch's pistol barked once, shockingly loud in the small space. A gouge appeared in the floor next to Lily's knee like a magic trick. She started crying.
"Yeah," Hutch said. "I didn't think you wanted to interrupt me again. David, you're a sweet kid, but you're dumb as a fucking bag of sand. What you just handed me here, it's a problem."
I'm sorry, I just...
"And it's going to require a little..."
Hutch took a drag on his cigarette and raised the pistol until David could see him staring down the black barrel.
"Risk management."
The air in the room changed as the door behind him opened. He turned to look, but someone big moved past him too fast to follow. Something quick and violent happened. The sounds of a fight. David was hit in the back, hard. He pitched forward, unable to get his hands out fast enough to stop his fall. His head bounced off the sealed stone floor, and for a breathless second, he was sure he'd been shot, been killed. Then the fight ended with Hutch screaming, crates crashing, the crackle of plastic splintering. David rose to his elbows. His nose was bleeding. Aunt Bobby stood where Hutch's crate shelter had been. She had the pistol in her hand and was considering it with a professional calm. Lily had scooted across the floor toward David as if to seek shelter behind him. Hutch, his cigarette gone, was cradling his right hand in his left. The index finger of his right hand, his trigger finger, stood off at an improbable angle.
"Who the fuck are you?"
Hutch growled. His voice was low, feral.
I'm Gunny Draper, Aunt Bobby said, ejecting the clip. She cleared the chamber and grabbed the thin brass glimmer out of the air.
So we should talk about this.
Lily pressed her hand against David's arm. He shifted, gathered her close against him. She smelled rank, body odor and smoke, and something else he couldn't identify. But he didn't care. Aunt Bobby pressed something, and the top of the gun slipped off the grip.
What have you got to say to me, dead girl?
Hutch asked. His voice didn't sound as tough as he probably hoped. Aunt Bobby pulled the barrel out of the gun and tossed it into a corner of the room, in the narrow space between some crates and the wall. She didn't look up from the gun, but she smiled.
The boy made a mistake, she said. But he treated you with respect. He didn't steal from you. He didn't try to track the girl down on his own. He didn't go to security. He didn't even try to sell the product and get the money.
Lily shivered. Or maybe David did, and it only seemed like it was her. Hutch scowled, but a thoughtful look stole into his eyes.
Aunt Bobby plucked a long, thin bit of metal out of the gun, and then a small black spring, and tossed both behind a different crate.
You're a tough guy in a tough business, and I respect that. Maybe you've killed some people, but you're also a businessman. Rational. Able to see the big picture.
She looked up at Hutch, smiled, and tossed him the grip of his gun.
So here's what I'm thinking. Take the bag, sell it, bury it, drop it in the recycler. It's yours. Do what you want with it.
Would anyway,
Hutch said, but she ignored him.
The girl's debt's paid, and David walks away. He's out. You don't come for him, he doesn't come for you. I don't come for you either.
She tossed him the empty top half of his gun, and he caught it with his uninjured hand. From where David was, hunched on the floor, both of them looked larger than life.
Girl's nothing,
Hutch said.
All drama, easy to replace. Boy's something special, though. Good cooks can't be swapped out just like that.
Aunt Bobby started working the bullets out of the magazine with one thumb, dropping each one into her wide, powerful palm.
Everyone's replaceable in work like yours. You've got four or five like him already, I bet.
She took out the last of the bullets and put them in her pocket, then passed him the empty magazine.
David's the one that got away. No disrespect. Not a risk to the operation. Just worked out until it didn't. That's the deal.
And if I say no?
I'll kill you, Aunt Bobby said in the same matter-of-fact tone. I'd prefer not to, but that's what happens if you say no.
That easy?
Hutch said with a scowl.
Maybe not that easy.
You're a tough guy, but I'm a nightmare wrapped in the apocalypse. And David is my beloved nephew. If you fuck with him after this, I will end every piece of you,
Bobby said, her own smile sad.
No disrespect.
Hutch's scowl twitched into a flicker of a smile.
They grow 'em big where you come from,
he said, and held up the disassembled pistol.
You broke my gun.
I noticed the spare magazine in your left pocket, she said. David, stand up. We're leaving now.
He walked ahead, Lily holding him and weeping quietly. Aunt Bobby took the rear, keeping them going quickly without quite making them run, and looking back behind her often. When they got near the tube station, Aunt Bobby put a hand on David's shoulder.
I can get you through the checkpoint, but I can't get her.
Lily's eyes were soft and wet, her expression calm and serene. Filthy and stinking, she was still beautiful. She was redeemed.
"Do you have somewhere you can go?"
David asked.
"Some place here in Martina's town where he can't find you?"
"I've got friends," she said. "They'll help."
"Go to them," Aunt Bobby said. "Stay out of sight."
David didn't want to let her go, didn't want to lose the contact of her arm against his. He saw her understand. She didn't step into his arms as much as flow there, soft and supple and changing as water. For a moment, her body was pressed against his perfectly, without a millimeter of space in between. Her lips were against his cheek, her breath in his ear. She was Una Mang for a moment, and he was Kaz Pratihari, and the world was a heady, powerful, romantic place. She shifted against him, and her lips against his were soft and warm, and they tasted like a promise.
"I'll find you," she whispered.
And then the moment was over, and she was walking a little unsteadily down the corridor, her head high. He wanted to run after her, to kiss her again, to take her home with him and fold her into his bed. He could feel his heartbeat in his neck. He had an erection.
"Come on," Aunt Bobby said. "Let's go home."
From Martina's town to Adderpole, she said nothing, just sat with her elbows resting on her knees, squeezing one of the bullets she'd taken between two fingers, then running it across her knuckles like a magic trick. Even through the chemical rush of relief, he dreaded what would come next. The disapproval, the lecture, the threats. When she spoke, with 5 minutes still before they reached Breach Candy, it wasn't what he'd expected to hear.
"That girl. You saved her, you know that? You saved her."
"Yeah."
"You feel good about that. You did a right thing, and that feels good."
"Yeah," he said.
"That good feeling is the most that girl will ever be able to give you."
The tube car's vibration was almost imperceptible. The monitors had tuned themselves to a news feed, unable to find any common ground between him and his aunt. David looked at his hands.
"She doesn't like me," he said. "She just acted like she did because he told her to. And then she knew I had money."
"She knew you had money, and she knew you were a good guy," Aunt Bobby said. "That's different."
David smiled and was surprised to kind of mean it. Aunt Bobby leaned back, stretched. When she shifted her head, the joints in her neck popped like firecrackers.
"I need to move out," she said.
"Okay," David said, suddenly finding himself wishing she wouldn't.
Too many losses today already, and this was one he hadn't even known would hurt.
"Where will you go?"
"Back to work."
Bobby flipped the bullet up and caught it, then juggled it across her fingers again.
"I need to find something to do."
She pointed at the news on the monitors with her chin. It was all about Earth and Mars and angry people with bombs.
"Maybe I can help."
"Okay," David said again. Then a moment later, "I'm glad you stayed with us."
"I should take you free climbing," she said. "You'd love it."
David only saw Lily one more time. It was his second year in development, about 3 weeks after he'd turned 18. He was in a noodle bar with the three other members of his team and their advisor, Dr. Fusek. The Wall was playing a live feed of the football match from the Mariner Valley with the sound turned low enough to talk over. The table screen, on the other hand, they'd tunneled into the arrays at the upper university, and between bottles of beer and tea and black ceramic bowls of noodles and sauce, their latest simulation models were running. Jeremy Ng, his dorm mate and the only other biochemist on the team, was shaking his head and pointing at the imagined surface of Mars that the computers back at their official labs were generating.
But the salt... Salinity's not an issue, David said, his frustration clear in his voice. That's why we put the sodium pumps in, remember? It won't build up across the membrane.
Gentlemen,
Dr. Fusek said, her tone both authoritative and amused.
You have spent 50 hours a week arguing this for the last 7 months. No point rethinking it now. We'll have solid projections soon enough.
Jeremy started to object, then stopped, started again, and ground to a halt. Beside him, Cassie Estenrod, their hydro systems expert, grinned.
If this really works, you guys will put the terraforming project a couple of decades ahead of schedule. You know that.
Dr. Fusek raised her hand, commanding silence. The simulation was almost done. Everyone at the table held their breath. David couldn't say what made him look up. A sense of being watched, maybe? A feeling of unease crawling up the back of his neck. Lily was there at the back by the bar, looking toward him without seeing him. The years hadn't been kind. Her skin belonged on a woman twice her age, and the elfin chin now just looked small. She had a child on her hip that looked about 6 months old and still too unformed to have a gender. She could have been anyone, except he had no question. A thin, electric jolt passed through him. For a split second, he was 15 again, on the edge of 16, and reckless as a fire. He remembered the way her kiss had felt, and almost without meaning to, he lifted his hand in a little wave. He saw it when she recognized him, a widening of the eyes, a shift in the angle of her shoulders. Her expression tightened with something like anger, fear looking for somewhere to go. The man sitting beside her touched her shoulder and said something. She shook her head, faced away. The man turned, scowling at the crowd. He met David's eyes for a moment, but there was nothing like understanding in them. David looked away from her for the last time.
Here we go, Cassie said as the first results began to come.
David put his elbows against the table as, one by one, values within his error bars clicked into place. He watched Dr. Fusek's eyebrows lift, watched Jeremy start to grin. The euphoria came. This has been a Hachette Audio production of Gods of Risk, an Expanse novella. Written by James S. A. Corey. Read by Eric Davies. Produced and directed by Dennis Kao. Sound editing by Fred Koch. Mixing and mastering by Jeremy Wesley. Production supervised by Elise Green. Gods of Risk is also available as an e-book from Orbit, an imprint of Hachette Book Group. Text copyright 2012 by James S. A. Corey. Audio production copyright 2014 Hachette Audio. All rights reserved. In accordance with the U.S. Copyright Act of 1976, the duplicating, uploading, and electronic sharing of any part of this audiobook without the permission of the publisher constitutes unlawful piracy and theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like to use material from the audiobook, other than for review purposes, Prior written permission must be obtained by contacting the publisher at permissions@hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events or locales, is entirely coincidental.